Welcome to Keep What You Earn, your judgment and jargon-free zone for entrepreneurs of all levels. Get ready to learn how to scale your business, save money in taxes, and create a business that grows your wealth. If it feels like the financial side of business is like eating your vegetables, well then think of this podcast as the ranch dressing to make the process a little more enjoyable. My name is Shannon Weinstein. I'm a CPA and business owner on a mission to simplify money and empower others through knowledge. I hope this episode inspires you to take action, but remember that the information we share is for educational purposes only and is not individual tax advice. Now that we got that out of the way, let's start the show. So today I want to talk to you about separating your business and personal finances. And if you've been listening to my content for a while, you kind of know the perspective that I have on this, which is how important it is to do those things. But it's my firm belief that if you're not invested, if you don't fully understand why we're telling you to separate your business and personal finances, or you think it's because that it will make your accountant's job easier and that's the only reason, I mean, it is a side effect, but it's not the only reason. And I'm going to give you three really concrete reasons today that you will want to separate your business and personal finances, so much so that you will probably be way more hyper-conscious of swiping that business credit card for personal expenses from here on out, but also just be more aware of the impact that it has when you commingle these things. So first and foremost, you know what I'm going to say, so I'm going to knock this one out in the first go-round, is that it is so important for your tax organization for you to be able to separate your business and personal finances, because when it comes to reporting your taxes, we have to report as accountants, we have to report for you your income and expenses related to your business. And if there's stuff commingled with personal, it becomes way more mucky to be able to figure out, okay, which transactions should be going on the business expenses versus which ones are just personal and have no tax impact. You know, also, which deposits are actually business income versus, you know, somebody paying you back for a lunch or whatever. So how can we distinguish between those things so we know how to treat them for tax purposes correctly? That's one big area there. And along with that goes your personal organization of those things. So if you're not able to keep track of what's coming in and out from your business and what's personal, then that actually has an impact on you. And what you may not realize is that down the line, especially as your business grows, this is going to become essential because you won't know where you've been. You won't have that breadcrumb trail. You won't have that series of data, that historical timeline that will help you predict your future. So you want to have really concrete and quality data to operate off of when you're making your decisions in your business. So it's, you know, a very founder or owner-centric benefit. It's not just about the accountants. It's not just about us telling you, you should go do this because we know it's good for you. It's actually good for you in a very real way in your experience as a business owner. Now, aside from the organizational aspects, I'm going to go with benefit number two, or the reason number two why you should be doing this. And that is an IRS audit. Now, in my experience, having supported IRS audits in the past, this is, and frankly, this is something that even in my auditing days when I was an auditor, I was never an auditor for the IRS, but I was an auditor for Fortune 50 companies for about 6 years. And what we would always do, one of the first dead giveaways something was wrong was when cash was not managed properly. And this is where they look first. The IRS, whenever they start an audit, will do what's called a bank deposit analysis. And what that is, they ask you for all your bank statements, wherever there are business income and expense accounts or business income and expense transactions. And here's the hard part of this. Normally in an audit, if you're getting audited for your business return, you will only get asked for your business bank statements. However, if you have business transactions in your personal or vice versa, this can create suspicion to the point where the IRS agent could say, hey, I noticed that there's some personal stuff in the business, and I noticed that there could be some business stuff in the personal. So I'm going to bring into scope, AKA, I'm going to make you provide me all of your personal bank statements as well. And we're going to ask you to defend why all of this is not income. We're going to also have to go through all your expenses. Guys, this is going to become a ridiculous surgery that could have been purely cosmetic. This creates a whole bunch of issues with your audits because Now you have to defend everything. Now it's going to take a lot longer. You're going to have to explain a lot more things. And the IRS agent's generally not going to be as accommodating. And what I mean by that is when you work in an audit with an agent, chances are if you make a really good first impression with your bank statements and with your ability to keep things separated, you have the opportunity to make that good first impression that will set the tone for the rest of the audit. And part of that goal is to set the tone that you are responsible, you are honest, and that you keep your things separated and that they can believe what you say. So if you're saying all my stuff separated, but then they go find that there's stuff that's commingled, you've lost their trust. And losing their trust is the biggest mistake you can make, because now they will not take your word at face value. Not that they would anyway, but they would be less likely to believe the explanations that you give them. They'll ask for more evidence and support to back things up. And that's not necessarily a bad thing if you're doing nothing wrong, but it's so time consuming. So in order to minimize the negative impact of an audit and how much time it will take you, I mean, think of it this way. An application to for a mortgage, if anyone has bought a home recently or ever in the past, I mean, I bought a mortgage, I bought a home in 2011 and I entered into a mortgage, and boy, was that invasive. That was a long ass process. I still remember having to collect all those documents for like weeks maybe, but felt like months. And I know how that feels. And it's very similar with an audit from the IRS, because you have to collect all these documents. They keep asking for stuff, asking more questions, you know, taking time to respond. I recently got out of an audit that lasted, I'm not kidding, 10 months. 10 months. It was awful. So again, you have to just make sure that you're keeping the stuff separated, because in the event of an audit, and you can't truly, in my opinion, in my experience, you can't prevent an audit. You can do things to minimize the likelihood, but there's going to be some, I'm going to make up a word, randomity. It's going to be sometimes random to the point where you might just get that lottery ticket, the lottery you don't want to win. You might just get that, you know, get picked, or for whatever reason, your return gets selected. There's only so much you can control over auditability of your tax return. And there's just a chance that you can get audited here and now, here and then. So just keep that in mind when you're managing your finances, that, you know, in the event of an audit, if it should happen, although very low likelihood, you will be expected to keep all that stuff separated. And it will make a difference in how that audit is conducted if you do or you do not. And lastly, this is something that people may not know, and I'm going to disclaim this one saying I am not a lawyer, but I'm going to talk about the legal ramifications of this, the potential legal ramifications of this. And I would tell you, consult with a lawyer to validate this. But my understanding is that if, let's say, in a hypothetical situation, you know how you set up an LLC and you may have been advised by a lawyer to set up an LLC to protect liability, right? And to keep your personal and your business assets separated, right? That's the point of the LLC for the most part. Well, if you do that, and then they always use the example of if you get sued, then those assets are protected. They're not liable. They're not eligible to be, you know, called upon in a sense to pay for those damages. Well, here's the thing. And I'm not saying that a judge would do this every single time, but you have to think about the logic behind this. If you are not respecting the boundaries between your business and your personal by commingling these funds and by using the business bank account as your personal piggy bank and vice versa, what will end up happening is if you are actually brought into a situation, if you are actually brought into a courtroom, let's say, where this is being called into question or you're being sued over something, and you're liable to pay damages, whether that be, say, a personal car accident, God forbid, or something with personal liability, or your business, an employee or a customer sues you for damages. Well, normally you'd say, okay, well, if a customer were to sue me, they can only go after my business assets. I mean, depending on your state laws and such, right? With all the disclaimers, yes, technically. However, depending on the law of your state and depending on this other thing, which I'm going to tell you, which is the commingling of your funds, that could impact it. Because if you think about this, there's this concept called piercing the corporate veil. Now, I want you to definitely discuss this with a lawyer if this could be something you're subject to. But we always talk about piercing the corporate veil. What does that mean? I call it breaking a hole in the force field that is your LLC that's supposed to protect you. So if there's a giant gaping hole in it, that means there's a place for someone to get you. And commingling your funds, if you think about that situation where you're in front of a judge, let's say, and you're about to find out what the damages are or how you're going to pay them. And they say, okay, well, how much is in your bank account? And you say, what's in the business bank account? But you're commingling left and right. A judge or whomever is deciding this could say, well, if you won't respect the boundaries of your business finances, why should we? Because if you're putting up a force field, but you add a little doggy door for yourself to go in and out, why can't anyone else use the doggy door? Why just you? So you got to think of it that way, that you are basically putting a damage to the force field here that you so carefully set up for yourself. So you have to make sure that you have the processes in place to keep these things separated and that you understand why you're separating them beyond just doing your accountant a favor or doing what they say. I promise you, I want you to trust me on this, that for the most part, if your accountant is giving you advice to do something like this, which kind of feels like eating the vegetables, like it's kind of like that advice that goes, you really should stretch. I couldn't tell you how many times my trainer says, you really need to stretch more. And like, I don't. And if it feels like that advice where you're like, you really need you to separate your business and personal. And you're like, I know I'm supposed to do that, but I don't really want to. And it's not my habit. And I'm just not used to doing it. You have to find a way to make that a habit. You have to find that a way to make this harder to do to yourself. Whether that be separating your physical cards, it could mean putting this behind, like having everything get approved, you know, as business or personal. It could mean actually having your bookkeeper send you a report. This is actually super helpful. Have your bookkeeper send you a report or run this in QuickBooks if you have it. Have them send you a report of all the transactions that were personal in nature that went through the owner's draw account in your QuickBooks. And I guarantee you, if you go through them, number one, there might actually be some business expenses sprinkled in there. So you might actually find some new deductions. But number two, you're going to go through it and realize how many things like subscriptions and things that are enrolled in that business bank account that shouldn't be, or business credit cards. And then you can go through and change the cards on those accounts. You can, you know, take your business credit card off of your saved credit cards on Amazon or Google. Take your business credit card off of those things and make it so that you have to consciously use it to purchase certain things and enter in the information for business. Do what you need to do to set the boundaries for yourself in order to make sure that you're following these rules and keeping things separated. So I hope you found this episode valuable. I promise I'm not trying to lecture you to go do this, but if every business owner did this who listens to the show, we would have a much better business world to live in. And I'm not just speaking about that from the perspective of an accountant. I know that you would save yourself from a lot of hassle down the road. So I encourage you to go do this and get those things separated as soon as you can. Thanks for listening. Finding the right support that you need for your business can be so confusing when it comes to accounting and tax. Sometimes it seems like you can't find a CPA or a tax pro who actually understands your business, or they charge way too much for what you actually need. I've seen this for so many entrepreneurs. They're in a bad relationship with their accountant because they don't know what to look for. It is not your fault. So I created a perfect guide for you that is totally free. It's called the Money Pro Matchmaker, and it will teach you what your pro should be doing, questions you can use to interview them to find the right person for you, and a guide to evaluate them so you know you're getting what you pay for. Do not get stuck or screwed with the wrong accountant. Download the guide now at moneypromatchmaker.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and review on your podcast platform. This small action goes a long way for podcasters to get our message heard by more business owners just like you. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to information about our guests and ways to get in touch with me. We'll see you on the next episode.